Future presentation.
Welcome back to another Untitled Movie Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Rohrbeck, alongside, he's allergic to tomatoes, but he is tomato meter approved, Eric Marchin.
It's amateur hour here, Matt.
Isn't it amateur hour every time we do this podcast?
It sure is. It sure is.
We've only been
lean into it this time.
Yeah. We've only been podcasting for probably over a decade at this point. Do you remember our first podcast for Movie Monarchy was Captain America: The Winter Soldier? Good
days
lord.
When the Russo brothers weren't complete egotistical maniacs.
Great. Today we are reviewing James Hawes, The Amateur, starring Rami Malek, Rachel Brosnahan, Lawrence Fishburne, Michael Stuhlbarg looking like Robin Williams and sounding like Robin Williams at times.
I mean, that
me.
Accent is all over the place.
I don't know what that accent is, but like every time I saw him, it
sounded like Albert
me.
Einstein almost at times too.
I don't know, man. I just got such late Robin Williams vibes from that.
Looks
whole,
good though.
He looks great. And I just, again, in moments, I was like, he sounds and looks like Robin Williams. Anyways, Eric, how you doing?
Matt, we're talking about The Amateur. How do you think I'm doing?
Yeah, it's, you know, it is what it is. It's fine.
Yeah.
I feel like this isn't going to be like a super long one. I don't have like.
It should be an hour for amateur hour.
No, I don't know if we're gonna go an hour on this one, but yeah, I don't have much to say. Didn't know this was previously adapted.
Yep,
into
from
a
1981
movie
with John Savage and Christopher Plummer. I did not know that either because it's a Canadian production.
Yeah, I was
and
gonna
so
say
I was looking for it the other night, and it's available to buy or rent on Amazon. I was actually looking for like a Blu-ray or something for it because I would like to see it because I watched the trailer for it. It is of the time of the early 80s, and the main difference being that I think John Savage, while he can be a little bit over the top as an actor, is more likable than Rami Malek.
Yeah, sure. I guess I can kick it off. Yeah. I don't have that much to say. Interesting, we haven't really, Rami Malek I feel like hasn't been a lead in a film since Bohemian Rhapsody. Is that true? Oof. I know he popped up in Oppenheimer and he's shown up in things here and there, but and I'm not a Rami Malek hater. I hate Bohemian Rhapsody. I liked Mr. Robot. I think he's got an interesting look. I don't think he's, you know, I think he's a decent enough actor, but
he was a co-lead in The Little Things with Denzel Washington.
That's right. Yeah, thank you. This movie, I have nothing good or bad to say about it other than it's just kind of generic and formulaic. It to me, no pun intended, reads like an airplane novel that your dad might read on a flight to anywhere that he could read in a couple hours.
And then he watches the movie, you know, when
on,
it's adapted on TBS.
Yes,
in the 90s.
Exactly. Exactly. And that is neither a compliment or derogatory because, like, I feel like it just plays completely straight. It plays out exactly how you would expect it to. It's neither exciting, but I was still kind of engaged with it throughout. I never kind of zoned out and was like bored. But it's just one of those nothing kind of movies. Movies that they don't make a lot of. And we said that.
That don't go to theaters about, at least.
Yeah, at least it does. It doesn't feel like a movie that gets made that often anymore. And we're a dime a dozen in the 90s. But we said that same thing about Black Bag, where look at those two kind of juxtapose against each other, both being spy thrillers and one that is thoroughly engaging and has filled with juicy, fun dialogue and great cinematography and doesn't
sensual.
Have a, yeah, sensual, sexy, like where this is your pretty standard revenge thriller spy movie that just kind of throws some kind of tech jargon at you. And, you know, even the interesting concept of this guy being, you know, the titular amateur and not this kind of super spy, nothing is played out in kind of a you know, nothing feels creative enough for this guy to do that. And I never once bought in that, like, he couldn't shoot them point blank. So he had to do all this kind of techie stuff to get revenge on his wife's killers. And
now, are you just jealous because this could have been a role that Tobin Bell could have sunk his teeth into?
Sure. Yeah. But even then, like, with, you know, a Kevin McAllister, you know, jigsaw kind of way, like, nothing is played out in. You know, there's a pool sequence that we've seen in the trailer that, like, you know, everything is just so exactly what you'd expect it to be that you're just kind of watch it and you're like, all right, this is probably a movie. And I've said this about other movies before, but a movie my dad might call me on a random, you know, Thursday evening in 7 months and go, hey, I just watched The Amateur on Disney Plus. Pretty good. Like that, I'd be like, yeah, I guess it's fine. You know, I like some of the people in it. Like you mentioned Michael Stuhlbarg, who I actually do genuinely like, and he's not in it much, but always like to see him pop up. And Holt McElhaney, I know, is one of those guys that I'm excited to see in Mission Impossible later.
Julianne Nicholson.
Yeah, like there's a lot of great people in this. John Bernthal I like, but is just kind of there. And
we'll talk about him in a second. I've got some interesting observations.
So anyways, it's one of those movies that I think is completely void of anything more than what's surface level on screen. And it's just kind of like, yeah, is it a mildly enjoyable time? Not really, but also kind of.
It's
but
a like movie.
It is a plain movie. It's a dad movie. It's like, you know, it's competent, but it's just kind of whatever. What about you?
It's a sluggishly paced spy thriller that lives and dies on Rami Malek's unpleasant performance. And I think like the casting of him is smart in terms of being kind of like dismissed and an underdog and not taken seriously, like even to the point, I mean, they overdo it. I think like when he's, you know, coming into work and he's wearing a backpack, this is coming from someone that is autistic, that is on the spectrum.
Yeah.
Like they are really pushing that but they're not
without saying it. Yeah.
So like, there'll be a moment in the movie where, Charlie, played by Rami Malek, is talking to Sarah, played by Rachel Brosnahan, on the phone, and she's in London on a work trip, and she makes a joke saying, like, he asks who this is, and she says, Saddam Hussein, and he says, Saddam Hussein is dead, and she says, I'm joking. That is, like, a thing where, like, people sometimes on the spectrum, I'm talking from my own experience,
take things very literal.
Exactly. And then there's moments where you have these flashbacks revealing a gift where she goes to hug him and be intimate, and the way that he reacts to it is very, you know, still kind of at a distance or removed a little bit. And so watching those scenes, I was more curious about how the two got together, more so than anything that was happening in this movie. I was wondering how, like, Sarah approached the relationship and how, like, you know, she fell for him and how he, you know, found, you know, a way to feel comfortable with her. Like, that was more interesting to me than the revenge thriller part of it, even though it is an interesting take on it. But like you were saying before, it never really explores aspects of it any deeper than just saying, hey, we have a guy who, you know, is great at deciphering things and you know, uses his intelligence and you know, eventually decides he can't really do the Jason Bourne, James Bond thing, so he's gonna have to use, you know, his intelligence in order to figure out a way to get at these people. And I think because you don't really spend any time with the villains other than seeing them through, you know, surveillance footage,
yeah,
you don't have any real connection to them either as villains and wanting them to suffer or pay the consequences, because they haven't been really built up other than showing you Michael Stuhlbarg at one point, who's, you know, in the credits. And I think like that's something as well where we could even talk about that with like Drop, where, you know, it's almost like they're giving away like who's the villain in the opening credits and not hiding that fact. And you know, like another actor that we didn't mention is Katrina Powell.
Why do you just think on like the billing of the people?
Yeah, I think like a general audience member doesn't care. Not going to pay attention. Who Michael Stuhlbarg is, but you do. I do. And as soon as
I don't know if that's played as like a spoiler, though, but they do hide his face. Yeah.
But when you see his name, you're kind of like, OK, well, if he's not, you know, a CIA agent or CIA director, like
he's clearly the guy wearing the mask at the beginning. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. And that's
can I jump in for
I just want to quickly say I was rooting for Holt McElhinney and Michael Stuhlbarg.
Jesus. I guess, sure. But you made a great point of the like kind of show not tell kind of thing is with the relationship too. I mean, you mentioned it with the villains of how they're not really, you know, they're just kind of faceless people until Stuhlbarg shows up in the last act. But and, you know, throughout these kind of random henchmen dudes, but their relationship, the whole movie relies on it. And you're really just, you know, you don't really get much from them other than those few things that you mentioned. And you don't even, to your point, you want to know more why they fell in love, why this relationship works. And you get like a tiny little bit of it at the beginning, but it's that classic kind of like wife dies movie, right? Where
it
it's like
great coffee. That's all I know.
Oh God, the coffee stuff, dude. It was so corny. Like hers, like, I just need my cup of coffee in the morning. And don't get me wrong, as a dude who drinks, I'm shaking it if you can hear this, a Trenta cold brew every single morning, and I'm a grumpy boy without it. But it's just like that kind of classic, you know, woman with a cup of coffee, like, I need my coffee before I start my day. And like that was the thing that they had. Yeah, I didn't really buy into it either. And it's just the kind of like, well, we know that if a dude's wife dies, he's going to be upset. So like that's the crux of the movie, right? We're not really given much more about the relationship. And yeah, the whole kind of like wants to be James Bond, but is really the hacker, is really Q, right? Yeah. It's basically like if Q went on a murder rampage, right? Like that's essentially what the movie is. And that sounds kind of fun, but when Amazon eventually does that spinoff movie, that might be more fun than this. I don't know. But it just plays out so kind of generic. Yeah.
Yeah. It just feels like it goes through the paces. And I think it's too long. I think like it needed to be 90 minutes. Like it just feels like it drags out. Like anytime you're invested in at least the kills, Lawrence Fishburne, I do think, is actually quite good in the movie as Henderson, although I laughed every time he's like, my friends call me Hendo. But I don't like what they did with that character ultimately as well. And there are moments where I think, because if you've seen enough spy movies or you've seen enough films where there are double crossing and, you know, intricate plot reveals down the line, this isn't really spoiler, but I was thinking at points that Rachel Brosnahan's character didn't die because they don't actually show her death in any specific or greater detail than telling you. And even when you see, you know, like the body in the coffin, like you don't actually see the body. So I was thinking there was some cover up based on something that Charlie did early on, you know, that basically exposed a certain part of the CIA. You know, like, and so that's not on the movie. That's just more so on like, okay, well, these are how these things are usually designed. So I guess that is a positive in terms of it not playing completely in cliche, but it also just feels, it drags. Like you're watching this thing and every time, you know, an action sequence happens or like that pool scene, which I think is the strongest moment, but again, you don't really have any connection. Like the villain is just a henchman basically and not really built up in any particularly interesting way. You just feel like, oh, you're watching like simulations that were constructed by the screenwriters and not really anything that's engaging on the level of like that visceral quality of like, yeah, you're rooting for somebody to do something horrible because, you know, it's out of love or it's out of, you know, something that is that it, the morality of the character.
Well, look at Last of Us that we're watching right now.
Exactly.
Right?
And that complicates things and makes it both you like the character for doing certain things, but then you question their, you know, actions. With this, I was just like, okay, I don't really believe that he could go as far as he did. And a lot of the times when he gets out of a situation, it's just through happenstance, and the happenstance is being the screenwriters got him out of a out of a pickle. It is the best Claritin ad I've ever seen.
I was gonna say that scene alone, dude. Like, I'm like, you can't shoot someone, but you can suffocate them in a cube. Like, that's horrific, man. Like, that's if I'm watching someone like die of allergies and like suffocation in like a, I just don't understand how that's any less, you know, gruesome as shooting someone. Like, yeah, sure, you don't see blood and stuff like that, but it's. It's actually almost a worse death than just shooting someone in the head.
But then it comes out on that as well, right? Like it still is like, oh, well, which there's is like a you know, a gray zone in which like he's uncertain and he's an amateur. He's
struggling with it. Yeah, I get it. Like he doesn't want to do it, but he does. Where in my head, I would go back to Last of Us, and I don't want to go too much because there's stuff. I forget what, you know.
But I was thinking about this too while I was watching The Last of Us.
No, and there's a moment where, you know, when, you know, Ellie says it was easier than I expected, right? Like, and I'm just being very vague in what I'm talking about because that season has just started. But
kill someone with
power. But I just, in my head, I just go, I don't know, if your wife gets murdered by someone and you know people are involved, I'm like, you're not hesitating, bro. You're just fucking killing them. Like,
well, especially for this like, kind of movie.
That's what I mean. Like, and so there's silly stuff like that. And I just never bought into it. And again, if you're going to do this, you got to make the kills kind of like interesting. And it just, again, goes through the motions is the key phrase that I think you've already said, where it's just kind of
generic.
Like, it's just a checkbox of like things. Yeah. That, and I almost, again, I felt the length, but not in like a boredom thing, but like almost like an out of
boredom.
That's a great name for this. Almost like an out of body experience. Like when I'm thinking about this movie, there's parts in the last act where I'm just like, I forget what happened. Cause I'm like, I either zoned out completely and, where, you know, it sort of just wraps up and I'm like, wait, how the fuck did we get here again? I forget. Cause there's a moment with John Bernthal's character later in the movie. And then I'm like, forget, or I'm just like, it was one of those movies where my mind kept drifting where I wasn't like, oh, I can't wait for this to be over. But it's just like a existential crisis kind of thing of like my body just felt there, but my mind was somewhere else. So,
well, that also I think comes in line with a lot of these movies, even the good ones, where the dialogue and the plotting becomes so convoluted, whether it be in Spycraft or in, you know, the character has to go to here and this and has to set these things up. And if you're not invested in it, that's a problem. If you don't understand it, that's also a problem. And if you're not engaging with it, you're just sitting there and waiting until maybe the next set piece or the next, you know, confrontation or, you know, some actor that has a small supporting role to come in and maybe, you know, give some credibility to a scene. And that's why, like, I thought like Holt McAlenney or Michael Stuhlbarg or Julianne Nicholson or Katrina Balf, like, all of those, even though Katrina Balf's doing like an accent as well, like a Russian accent that's very strange, they all are, I think, better than Rami Malek. And when they're on screen with him, you don't want them to go away. You don't want to be left with Rami Malek. It's the same thing with Lawrence Fishburne, where it's like, you know, these actors are outshining the lead, and almost like that's going against the movie, because at the end of the film, you want the character to come into his own. And you know, like the biggest takeaway I had from this movie, and especially it's funny because it's near the end of the film, is that the amateur shops at Kroger. Like, that was my favorite bit when you see him walking outside of a Kroger.
Yeah.
So like things like that, where it's like, if you're looking at those little details, you know, you have a problem, and it just sits there. And I think that's why it would work better as a movie in the 90s on cable, because you could just flip it on at any point and maybe watch 10 minutes of it and then,
or jump in halfway through and you kind of get the gist of what's happening
and not even watch the whole thing and just like flip through, like, oh, catch a scene that maybe you enjoy and then, you know, move on. Like in one scene,
you see the entire movie over 7 years when you watch it in like 20 minute clips on TNT or whatever. Right?
Exactly. And, like, and then it's like, I rate this on Letterboxd because I finally watched it in one sitting. The John Bernthal thing, I just want to quickly say as well, I find it fascinating that in the month of April, we're getting two films with assassins where he is in it and he's playing kind of similar roles and he's opposite autistic assassins.
There's with accountant, kind of, the accountant.
Yeah, the accountant too.
And he's so in Daredevil as well.
Yeah, so I find all of that interesting. And Jon Bernthal, he's never really a lead in very much. And so like every role that you ever see him in, he's in maybe one or two scenes. I don't mind Jon Bernthal. I think sometimes he can be a little much, but like when he's in something like The Wolf of Wall Street, I think he's quite good.
Yeah.
And I don't like dislike him, but there is that interesting thing of like where he is now, he hasn't really had, other than the Punisher series, a lead role in anything. And I find that kind of interesting as well, where he's sticking to the character actor supporting thing. Like, I wonder, not that he would be better in the amateur, because I think as the lead, because I think you wouldn't believe that he's, you know, good at tech and not great at the job, because he's more of a, you know, a gun for hire type almost within the CIA. But there, it is fascinating to me that like he is like, even Baby Driver kind of like makes a nod to that. Like, if you don't see me again, that means I'm dead. Or,
right. Know. Yeah.
So I find his career very interesting in terms of where, what he's doing, but also why he's choosing certain things.
He's good in The Bear as well, but
Definitely. And he I do like him. I just find like, you know, he's a guy where I would think like Hollywood would try to do something more with him in a bigger role, but maybe he doesn't want to do that. I don't know. Yeah. But again, like all the supporting people that you see in this movie, I think are more interesting than the lead.
Well, Rami Malek has been kind of typecast since Mr. Robot to an extent, but you know, and I forgot Bohemian Rhapsody is in 2018. So it's like that. I felt like, oh, that movie came out a couple years ago.
Yeah.
When you're like, oh shit.
That was our second review for this show.
This version of the podcast. Yeah, because he's done Doolittle, The Little Things, No Time to Die, which is a huge thing as a villain, right? But
well, talking about Bond too, right?
Yeah, no, Amsterdam and Oppenheimer. So, you know, I was like, oh, has he been in anything else? I'm like, that was like fucking 7 years ago. I forgot.
Well, Doolittle's just a voice, to be fair.
Sure, and a lot of those are smaller roles with Oppenheimer, and even Amsterdam's a smaller role, I think, too, right? But
not small enough, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, yeah, just a whatever movie. It's one of those, you know, if it's on Disney Plus, which it will be very soon.
Your dad will give you a call and say, exactly, have you seen this movie? And you'll be like, yeah, I did.
Do I suggest that your dad watches it? He'll probably mildly enjoy it, I'm not going to lie. And then do I suggest you watch it on an airplane? Maybe. Like, I don't know. Not really. But it's just kind of there. And, I
laugh so much at there's one trick that the amateur pulls with face augmentation, that
deep faking,
deep faking, where I almost feel like the writers and the director were like, oh, this is gonna be so clever, it's gonna be talking to like what's going on now, and you just look at it and it's the most ridiculous thing, because like you think the CIA would be able to easily, you know,
but he's the one who created all the programs, remember? So it's a lot of that. Anyways, thank you all for listening. We really do appreciate it. We have a lot of other stuff out right now that you guys can go check out. We have a review up for Warfare, which you guys can check out. We also have a review for season 2 of The Last of Us, a complete spoiler-free review. Soon Eric will have a Untitled Movie Podcast cross Film Junk podcast that's going up, which is an absolute blast, so go check that out. And then we also have recaps for the season 1 finale of The Last of Us, as well as the season 2 premiere of The Last of Us. Those can all be found on our other show, The Cast of Us, an HBO The Last of Us podcast. So please go subscribe to that. We'd really appreciate it. The review of Last of Us will be up on both channels, but the recaps will only be over on that other channel. You can find everything over on our letterbox, which is Untitled_Movies, and you can follow Eric and I on all those social medias at Matt Rohrbeck and at EM6211 or Eric Marchin, depending on the platform. Eric, anything else you want to say before we go?
Yeah, we'll have a Until Dawn interview coming up as well.
And review
Steve Newburn, and Really lovely guy who worked on the prosthetics and makeup effects on that film. So Matt has been very busy, you know, behind the scenes editing and finessing. Oh, and David Cronenberg too for the show. So that's coming up as well. So we got a lot of stuff in the near future.
We're it's back, Eric's baby. Eric's Heroes Week with the Film Junk Podcast, Cronenberg. So it's a big week for Eric Marchin. So go check out.
No amateur hour here, baby.
Woo! Until next time.
I'm gonna make a nice pot of coffee. You want one, Matt?
I love my coffee.